Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up Monday, the state of American public opinion. We will look deep into recent polls on the State of the Union address, the change of power in Washington, the health reform law, and other top issues. Everyone cites their favorite polls to back up their politics. What do the polls really say when taken together and when you take a deep dive? That's coming up Monday here on The Brian Lehrer Show. Right now, more dramatic developments from Egypt. According to the AP, moments ago, thousands of anti-government protesters wielding rocks, glass, and sticks actually chased hundreds of riot police away from the main square in downtown Cairo, and several of the policemen stripped off their uniforms and badges and joined the demonstrators. An Associated Press reporter saw the protesters cheering the police who joined them and hoisting them on their shoulders in one of the many dramatic and chaotic scenes across Egypt today. After chasing the police, says the AP, thousands of protesters were able to flood into the huge Tahrir Square downtown after being kept out most of the day by a very heavy police presence. Few police could be seen around the square after the confrontation. Wow. One of our next guests will be able to comment on this, but we have a lot more to talk about with her, too, and with a second guest. You know, there are many ways to quote the Founding Fathers and describe their intentions in the establishment of this country, as, of course, we've discovered in recent weeks. But if you're a big United States history buff, get ready to test your mettle when it comes to this quote. "For happily, the government of the United States gives to bigotry no sanction, to persecution no assistance, requires only that they who live under its protection should demean themselves as good citizens in giving it on all occasions their effectual support." So who was that and what was he talking about? Well, if you're thinking George Washington, who was writing Letter to the Hebrew Congregation in Newport, Rhode Island in 1790, then congratulations, you're absolutely right. The letter is now a model for a project from Facing History and Ourselves, a group which uses lessons from the past to help teach about moral choices today. To talk about the project on religious freedom, I am joined today by Adam Strom, Director of Content, Research, and Development for Facing History and Ourselves. Also with us is Farah Anwar Pandit, the first special representative to Muslim communities for the United States State Department, and we will also ask her about the U.S. and the Arab democracy protests. So Adam and Farah, welcome to WNYC. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, welcome.
Adam,
Hi.
Give us a little more background on Washington's letter to the Hebrew congregation in Newport, Rhode Island. What prompted Washington to write it?
Well, it's actually, it's really an interesting moment in history, right, because America is defining itself as a nation right at that very moment. And so the Constitution has been signed, and people are ratifying it. Actually, Rhode Island, where he writes his letter, is one of the last states to ratify the Constitution. And actually, at that moment, they're debating the Bill of Rights around the country. And Washington's kind of on a tour to talk about these issues. And interestingly, that when he visits Newport, Rhode Island, the town elders have the representative of a kind of a tiny Hebrew congregation they've selected the representative to read Washington a public letter. And he writes Washington a beautiful, beautiful letter, which Washington quotes back to him in 1790. And so it's a wonderful exchange where right now the first president is trying to think about what do I want to say about religious pluralism and diversity in this new country.
So what's the project for students that you have related to this?
Well, there's a number of projects, but in the New York City area, we've actually just begun an essay contest. We're really trying to use that to get students just to begin to start to think about what can you learn from reflecting on this very early moment in American religious history. So if students or teachers go to facinghistory.org/nobigotry, you can learn about an essay contest that we have, but it's really just the beginning of an initiative that we're doing that includes a symposium that Farah is going to be part of on Monday in New York, as well as a number of educator workshops that we're beginning.
Now, Farah Anwar Pandit, recently the quote from George Washington was used again by Mayor Bloomberg in reference to the Muslim Community Center in Lower Manhattan, the controversial so-called Ground Zero Mosque, defending it on grounds of religious freedom. Now, you are the State Department Special Representative to Muslim Communities. Is that how you see the letter?
You know what? I want to thank you very much for bringing this particular program to light, because I think what Facing History in itself ourselves is doing around the world, not just in our country, is just to shed light on some very important pieces of our history, our global history, our common human history that talks about really key issues. This letter by George Washington is so instructive and important for us as Americans at this moment in time, when there is a president in the White House that has called on all of us to look forward in terms of mutual respect of all people, and to respect the diversity of many faiths and many creeds and many religions that make up Americans. And even in his comments the other night at the State of the Union, the president was talking about some of these important American principles. So I think this is the right moment to talk about this wonderful initiative that Facing History and Ourselves is doing.
I have two letters here, both written by students who took part in this letter-writing project. They both zeroed in on the issue of the Lower Manhattan Community Center, and I'm going to read a couple of excerpts. Dear Beloved, now this was written, and I don't know, Adam, if you want to set this up for us at all. This was written by Prince Taylor, a 12th grader from the Facing History School. And it starts, Dear Beloved U.S. Citizens.
Yes. So the prompt was to think about if you're Washington and you're going to be writing a letter today, who would you be writing it to?
So he's in the voice here of George Washington as if Washington was alive today.
Yeah, or looking back from the grave.
And the way Prince Taylor writes it, Washington says, there is nothing I want to happen more than to broaden and secure religious freedom in our country. I am confident that a lot of Americans feel the same way, but this cannot happen if everyone is not on the same page. The mosque situation is a perfect example of taking religious freedom away, and that is not what this country is built on. That just causes a lot of unwanted problems, which further complicates things. With religious freedom, everyone is happy, and they should be. Everyone can practice the religion they choose, and they are happy. If everyone is happy in our country, that opens the door for so many other great things just waiting to happen. The rewards are endless. With that being said, I am confident in saying that religious freedom is a must. Sincerely, George Washington. Farah?
I love that letter. What a great letter for a young 12-year-old to write. And it embodies the spirit of, I think, the youth generation here in America. We know what our country is about. We know what our Constitution is about. And we know what the rights are for everybody who is an American. And the ability to practice our faiths freely is part of the Constitution. And I'm smiling as I say this, because I've had many young people around the world, not just here in America, ask me questions about what's happened in the last 6 months, surrounding the Park 51 issue, and if this means that Muslims don't have places to pray in America. And the fact on the ground is that, as we know, our Constitution provides the right. And in fact, mosques are in every state in America, and Muslims are integrated and are part and parcel of America. The president, talked about Muslims being part of the American family in his State of the Union. But I also think I'm smiling too, because this young child is learning history, and he's thinking about the journey of America and why we became Americans, and the importance of freedom of faith, and freedom of assembly. And we have a country with presidents that go back to George Washington and come all the way forward. Whether it was George Washington that wrote this wonderful letter, or it was Thomas Jefferson, who in his personal library had a Quran, or it is the fact that Eisenhower gave land to the Islamic Center in Washington when there was no place for them to pray about more than 50 years ago, or it was George Bush that put a Quran in the White House library for the first time in American history, or it was President Obama who made engagement with Muslims around the world an important part of his administration. Right off the bat, we have presidents who understand that importance of diversity of faiths around our country and the values that make up America.
Now, Adam, you're having an event Monday night at NYU where you'll be launching an initiative to explore religious freedom and intolerance around the world. It includes a symposium for teachers. How does one teach something like religious freedom?
Well, it's really interesting. First, I want to say that teachers do not get enough preparation to talk about these issues in the classroom. It's really, again, interesting. I was looking at the – do you remember there was a Pew study in the fall about Americans' religious knowledge? And one of the things that Americans don't know very much about, and this is including teachers, is actually what is this freedom to talk about issues of religion in the classroom. Most states require that these issues sort of come up, but they don't provide teachers with the resources to talk about this. They don't provide them the training that they need to talk about these issues. And so too often teachers are left swimming. So what we really want to do is help teachers provide them some historically grounded work, right? So the idea is, jump into to a discussion of Park 51. It's interesting Prince made that connection. I've read other letters that students have written that have talked kind of about early American Catholic history, or early American Jewish history. So it's interesting the connection that Prince and that particular letter made. So what we're going to be doing is providing teachers with development, in workshops. We're going to be providing them with a resource book. But the most important thing that teachers need in this conversation about education is they need coaching. They need guidance. And so as an organization, our job is out there to help mentor teachers so they can help their students think deeply about the kind of the important global civic issues.
And Farah, as special representative to Muslim communities for the State Department, is this mostly outreach to domestic Muslim communities, or do you go around the world too?
Well, it is because I'm at the Department of State. It's outside of the borders of our country. So
of course, that's the State Department's
job. I do my work
job.
Overseas. But I want to echo what Adam said. The tools that he is providing teachers here in America are instrumental, not just for our teachers here in America, but for the global conversations around the world. And I know that Facing History does do work in other parts of the world and shares curriculum and background materials in a wide variety of ways. And I think what he's put his finger on very importantly is if we don't have the resources that teachers can use to be able to affect the minds of the young generation, we are doing a disservice to humanity. So I think it's important for us to understand history and not speculate about why things happen, but rather read about why they happened and to learn and analyze from history going forward.
And you can learn more about this project from Facing History and ourselves by going to the website, nobigotry.facinghistory.com. org if you want to find out more about what they do or the Monday event. But
Brian,
since you represent, ask Farah, since you represent the U.S. State Department to Muslims around the world, our next guests are going to be updating us on the very fast-changing situation in Egypt. Some of the things just coming out now, the ruling party headquarters in Cairo is burning. The Egyptian military has deployed for the first time on the streets of Cairo since the anti-government protesters took up their challenge. We heard about the social media blackout since last night, so we're going to get an update from our next guests. But since you represent the State Department, these pro-democracy demonstrations around the Arab world seemed aimed at dictatorships backed by the United States. Does our country have a sorry record in saying to Muslims globally that we're the beacon of freedom, but then backing people like Mubarak and Ben Ali and Saleh for our own convenience?
Well, I want to say a couple of things. One is you will hear and have been hearing statements from P.J. Crowley, Assistant Secretary Jeff Feltman, and others from the State Department who are being very specific about what's taking place in that region of the world right now. And you also heard Secretary of State Clinton giving some really excellent remarks both yesterday and the day before about the universal values of human rights that we support around the world, that this is an issue for the people of Egypt and the government. That the U.S. supports freedoms of speech and assembly. You've heard these themes being echoed. But let me say a couple of things. One is, as some of my colleagues have also said, we have a very long-standing and multifaceted relationship with Egypt, not just with the government, but also with its people. And it's a relationship that stretches back for decades. And also, it is important to state that this is a relationship that rests in shared goals for the region. It's a multifaceted relationship that's built on many things, and including, for example, shared goals in terms of the two-state solution in Israel-Palestine, and including the stability and reintegration of Iraq in the region. These are shared goals that we have with Egypt. Egypt is a valuable partner, and I know that there's a lot going on right now, and it's in real time, and you will hear that the spokesman from the State Department speak in real time about these issues, and I urge your listeners to go to state.gov and hear what PJ has to say.
But the history suggests that when you talk to Muslims around the world, they're not interested in Egypt helping the United States with Israel-Palestine. They're not interested in Egypt helping the United States with the controversial Iraq war. They're interested in the United States propping up Mubarak for his domestic repression.
So, Brian, let me talk about the multifaceted approach that we have with many countries, including Egypt. And I think it's important that you're not so one-dimensional as you're asking this question, because we have done a lot of work as we think about civil society. And the Secretary has been very clear about her commitment to civil society. Her speech in Doha last week at the Forum for the Future focused on young people, focused on civil society. Her speeches around the world on the importance of internet freedom, the freedoms that we give people to be heard, the importance of listening to others, are part of that multifaceted approach that we have. Everything is not just one-dimensional. So I'd like to just sort of, you know, put things in perspective here and understand that that as we think about what's taking place, not just in Egypt, but in other parts of the Middle East right now, these are issues, and each case is different. Tunisia is different than Egypt. What's happening in Yemen is different than what's happening in Lebanon. You cannot just paint one big brush and suggest that everybody is the same and this is all the same thing. There are different needs of different people in different parts of the region, and they are expressing them openly and vibrantly. We support the ability for people to express themselves, and that is a core value of the United States. We've had that value from the beginning of time. I mean, this is who we are. And for decades, we have done a lot with our integration and initiatives to work with civil society to let their positions be known and to be heard. And on the issue of reforms, we have been both vocal both externally and privately with leaders across the Middle East that we are committed to these values that I've just been talking about, and we've urged everyone to push forward political reform, social reform, and that we underscore the importance of freedom of expression.
So we will leave it there and go on to our next guest and find out what's happening in Egypt as that situation moves very quickly. Farah Anwar Pandit, First Special Representative to Muslim Communities for the U.S. Department of State. Thank you very much for answering our questions. And Adam Strom, Director of Content Research and Development for Facing History and Ourselves. Do you want a last word?
Just first to thank you very much, and then sadly, to correct the website, it's www.facinghistory.org/nobigotry. I miss your show. I live in Boston now.
facinghistory.org/nobigotry to get to this particular project.
Great. Thanks so much, Brian.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Thank you both very much. The latest on Egypt coming up in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.